Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, we've got quite the Green Bay Packers comeback to talk about against the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday at Lambeau Field. Just to set the stage, the hottest home game in team history. The defense gives up a couple early touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers throws just the second pick six of his career. And the Packers are down 14 at the half. And I guess if you have to say, you know, when the comeback started, it really was the very first play of the second half, a 51-yard pass to Lance Kendricks, and the Packers got going and eventually were able to pull it off.
Well, the thing that impressed me about this game, Mike, is how they had different guys in different stages of their career really step up. You have a guy like Kendricks, who was signed in the offseason as a free agent, ends up making a big game-breaking type play at the beginning of the second half. Geronimo Allison has 103 of his 122 receiving yards in the final 19 minutes, really, of the game, including overtime. And Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. And for him to be able to shake off, as you mentioned, the second pick six of his career, first one since 2009,
right,
and be able to rally this team the way he did, it was incredible. And again, it just adds another chapter to the legacy, and the fact now he has beaten all 31 teams in the NFL, other than, of course, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and he's passed John Elway on the all-time touchdown pass list. And what can you say? Rodgers takes the ball, 3 minutes and 46 seconds to go, 75 yards, needing a touchdown. The score's 24-17 at that point. And I believe the numbers were 9 of 11 passing on that fourth quarter drive. He hits Jordy Nelson right by the front pylon there with a really tight window throw, 17 seconds left to tie the game. A really impressive drive there for the Packers. And now a comeback like this doesn't happen, obviously, without the defense stepping up.
Right.
And after a rough start to the game, the defense did have a stretch there, five consecutive possessions. The Bengals did not score, one of those being a missed field goal right after a sack by Josh Jones. That was a big play. But I'll be honest, Wes, I thought really the Packers might have blown their chance to get back into this game because the defense was wearing down in the fourth quarter. The offense hadn't really taken full advantage of the opportunities. There was a first and five on like the 12-yard line, ended up having to settle for a field goal there instead of punching it in for a touchdown. And the defense was wearing down, but then they catch a break. Joe Mixon slips on third and one. The Bengals have to settle for a field goal, and that kept the Packers in it, only down seven, and gave Aaron Rodgers one more chance.
Well, the one thing the defense definitely did in the second half is really pulled together a lot more. You saw Dom Capers, he was able to get home with his pressure packages, the two sacks for Josh Jones, his first two of his NFL career. Ahmad Brooks gets his first career sack as a member of the Packers. So they were able to get a little bit more pressure, and then really the difference that Josh Jones made at the second level of that defense. With the injuries that they had, they were without Devon House, they were without Kentrell Bryce, so the adjustment they made to that nitro package was Marwin Evans playing the deep safety position, Josh Jones playing the nitro position next to Blake Martinez, who had 11 tackles in his own right, and Morgan Burnett playing slot. So they had four safeties on the field, and I think even though early on where they did, as you mentioned, kind of get worn down a little bit by the run, they were able to galvanize there in the second half and really reap the benefits of that approach. They had to make an adjustment. They were without five starters on defense, and they made it.
Yeah, and you could see when the overtime began that the defense was re-energized,
right,
because that final drive for the Bengals, Joe Mixon, before he slipped on the third and one, his previous four carries were 6, 6, 7, and 9 yards. They were having a hard time stopping him. They catch a break on the third and one. The Bengals don't convert. They kick the field goal. The Packers get the ball back. I'm not even sure the Packers would have gotten the ball back if that third and one gets converted. But they get the reprieve, and then you could see after the Packers tied it up, the defense got a little rest. You lose the coin toss, the Bengals decide to take the ball, but that defense took the field in overtime. The crowd was behind them. They were re-energized and revitalized, and they just did not give an inch to the Bengals.
Well, and the Packers, Mike, for the number of years now have been remaking their defense through the draft, and I thought you saw that really pay dividends. You know, Blake Martinez has a big couple tackles for a loss. I thought Kenny Clark really showed up well with not having Mike Daniels on the defensive line and getting some stops. That's really what it came down to, is first down, forcing them into longer situations, not allowing them to chip in and be able to get those second and short, third and short kind of conversions. And then once they got to third down with the pass rush, with the dime package, able to get home there, really turned the course of a game. I'll be honest with you, though, this was an interesting contest in that the Packers really had to run with that nitro package the entire time. I don't think they played base Oki the entire game. It was an adjustment they made. It took time for everything to settle in. But at the end of the day, you know, A.J. Green got his yards, but for the most part, nobody else really hurt them.
Yeah, and when the Packers got the ball back in overtime on offense, it came down to third and 10. Aaron Rodgers found Geronimo Allison leaking down the sideline, and a big play for 72 yards that sets up the game-winning field goal.
Unbelievable play, and it really, we were talking all offseason and training camp about Geronimo and being able to get the yards after the catch. We'll go into that a little bit more later in the show, but for him to extend that, get down to the 7-yard line, Mason Crosby knocks it home with the 27-yard game-winning field goal. It was interesting, though, afterwards. He said he felt more pressure on the point-after attempt at the end of regulation that tied it at 24 than he did the game winner, and that was probably because of the point after change. It actually was a longer field goal than
right.
the one that actually won the game.
Yeah, no question about it. That is interesting how those it's not a 20-yard PAT anymore.
Right.
You need that extra point to tie the game. There's a little bit more trepidation as to just what's going to happen. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, you brought it up in the first segment, and that's with what the Packers were doing defensively, dealing with the injuries. You don't have Mike Daniels, you don't have Nick Perry, you don't have Devon House, you don't have Kentrell Bryce. Your defense is thrown into a situation where you're going to find out, you're forced to find out what else you have.
Right.
And the Packers found out that this rookie safety they drafted in the second round out of North Carolina State is a player that is going to help this defense, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, and it's a credit to, I want to mention Victoria McBride, our social intern here at Packers.com. She came from NC State, and she was talking about this guy, Josh Jones, and what kind of difference maker he's going to be for the Packers defense, and I think you've seen that over the last two games. Gets thrown in there in a pinch against Atlanta, and then on Sunday night, gets thrown in there in his first NFL start at the nitro nickel spot. It was a position that he had shadowed Morgan Burnett in throughout training camp.
Right.
We saw him taking reps there. He said he's also still worked there since the start of the regular season. And really, that's the adjustment the Packers felt like they needed to make. They could have left Burnett there. They could have put Josh Jones on the back end. But without having Jake Ryan there as well, they wanted a little bit more, you know, of those safety run defending type presence in the trenches. So you get that and having Burnett at the slot and having Jones at that nickel linebacker position. I thought him and Blake Martinez, just like Burnett, played really well together.
Yep.
23 tackles all told. And I thought more than anything, the speed and physicality that Jones brings, his brand of football really meshed well with this defense. He could chase guys down. He was always by the ball. He looks like a playmaker, Mike. And I thought for everything the Packers made him out to be throughout the offseason program, all the excitement, all the anticipation, the second-round pick lived up to that on Sunday.
Yeah, I was impressed with him right from the get-go, but maybe for a little bit different reason, and that was because early in the game there was a series. The Bengals hit a pass to their backup tight end, Tyler Kroft, who was filling in for Tyler Eifert,
right,
who was injured. Josh Jones kind of blew the coverage on that or you know, let the tight end leak out, got a little too open over there by the sideline. It was maybe a 14, 15-yard catch for a first down, moves the chains. But then right after that, he comes back and chops down a running back at the line of scrimmage with a tackle, then comes on a blitz and gets the sack and stops the drive and forces a punt. When a young player can bounce back from a moment where he gave up a pass to a tight end that, you know, he knows he didn't cover him as well as he should have, and he comes right back and makes those next couple of plays. I got a sense right there that this could be a heck of a day for Josh Jones, and it turned out to be.
It's a great point, Mike, because that was something that was in the back of his mind at the end of the game, knowing that he had that missed opportunity. When you have the defender or you have the offensive player open in the flat, the Packers were in one of those little more zone concepts, pulling off a little bit, trying to defend that first down. Jones finds himself in the open space there. He said it wasn't going to be the prettiest tackle. He understood that, but he made the tackle. And then obviously the Bengals had to do the punt after the three and out. Packers offense gets a chance to come down and win the game. Those are the type of plays young players have to make, though. And there's going to be rough moments. There's going to be missed tackles at times. But for Jones to battle back, to put together the performance he did, really incredible. And also, I thought in terms of a pass rusher, being able to show a little bit of explosiveness there as well. That's a different dimension that he adds.
Yeah, you mentioned it right away when you said speed and physicality. And I think it showed up more than anything when Dom Capers sent Josh Jones on a blitz from, right. You know, from the slot or from that nitro spot, whatever you want to call it. His explosiveness going after the quarterback and getting his arms around him, getting him on the ground. That sack in the third quarter there that pushed that field goal attempt back, I don't remember if it was an extra 8 yards, 10 yards, whatever it was there on the sack, but the Bengals kicker ended up missing it, and obviously that's when a game goes to overtime and there's a missed field goal in the mix. You know that that's a big play, and you know you have to believe if that field goal is 10 yards closer, he probably makes it, and the Packers are in big trouble.
Yeah, and it reminded me a lot of what Morgan Burnett did last year when he had his three sacks, only one of two safeties, I think, in the league that had three sacks and two interceptions. It's a different makings position. It's a playmaking position. And as Burnett even said afterwards too, it's a credit to that room. The fact that the Packers were able to dedicate themselves to really a four safety package with HaHa Clinton Dix playing in the back end alongside Marwin Evans, another undrafted rookie from a year ago, to be able to weather not having Bryce out there and still be incredibly effective at that position, again, speaks to, I think, what the Packers have accomplished there over the last 4 years and really the evolution that position has made in Green Bay.
Well, it's kind of funny because I remember we were talking last year all the time with the injuries the Packers were dealing with on offense, how it was always just this week-to-week game plan kind right. of thing. How are you going to get the job done? And I hate to say we're already talking about that with the defense, but when guys like Mike Daniels and Nick Perry aren't going to play, and when Devon House and Kentrell Bryce aren't going to play, you've got to come up with a plan. It may not be something we've seen before. It may not be something you're going to be able to do every week, but it's about figuring out what it takes with what you have to get the job done against the team you're facing that day. And, you know, the Packers did it in a little bit of an unorthodox fashion.
Yeah, and a credit to them too, Mike. You alluded to this in the first segment, but, I mean, for the Bengals end up with 3.7 yards per run, Mixon only 3.4 despite having that 20-yard run early in the contest. And they didn't have Jake Ryan. They didn't run two inside linebackers on the field at the same time throughout the game. Really says a lot about what Jones did and what the Packers safeties were able to accomplish.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that too, that Jake Ryan, who's, you know, maybe not necessarily a starter every game, but definitely a regular when it comes
Absolutely.
To run defense, and he wasn't in there either. But with that, we have to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And again, Wes, if we switch back to the offensive side of the ball, it's somewhat the same theme in that you're without your starting left tackle, your starting right tackle goes out during the game. Randall Cobb, your slot receiver, your veteran, also misses the game. A case where at some point you're going to find out exactly what you have. We didn't think Geronimo Allison could be a big player in this offense because we saw it towards the tail end of his rookie season. But boy, did he step up big. You mentioned it. He only had two catches for 19 yards heading into the final drive of the fourth quarter there, 3:46 to go. And from there until the end of the game, four catches for over 100 yards, and he becomes the difference maker that helps the Packers pull out this victory.
Yeah, this is the kind of performance that kind of makes you smile a little bit, because you talk about the NFL draft and the 250-some players that are taken every year. Geronimo Allison, the job he's done for the Packers, I mean, they got a steal in their undrafted free agent class from a year ago.
Yep.
This guy has become a catalyst with this offense, and Jordy Nelson kind of echoed those comments. When you don't have Randall Cobb, a guy that's been so proficient at helping this offense move the chains, to have someone you can turn to like Allison is a big plus. The 72-yard catch by no means is, I mean, that's the biggest play the Packers have arguably had this season
yeah,
so far.
No question.
But also what stands out to me, Mike, is the plays he made on the series in which the Packers were able to tie the game in the
right.
fourth quarter. Comes out and gets a 17-yard catch. There was a pass across the middle he got his hands on he wasn't able to bring in. He bounces back immediately after that, catches an 11-yard pass from Rodgers on 3rd-and-9 to keep the chains moving. He really is in addition to being able to get that play to put them in position to win the game, it was that series that allowed the Packers to move down the field to gain some momentum and tempo and let Aaron Rodgers take it from there.
Yeah, and if you want to have any discussion about just how much Rodgers trusts Geronimo Allison, you said it on that series. There's a pass over the middle. He drops it, a ball that he could have caught. And the very next play, 3rd and 9, and Rodgers goes to Allison for 11 yards to move the chains. He didn't back off, going to him, even though there was a frustrating drop there. He actually went to him then on the next play after that, only gained 3 yards.
Right.
But Rodgers just kept going to him. And he said after the game, you know, he was talking about how back in Allison's first day of training camp as a rookie, that Rodgers was like looking at him going, how does this guy not get drafted? You know, this kid's fantastic. And, he made an early impression, and we've seen the growth. We've seen the progress. He's living up to it. And that 72-yard catch and run was pretty spectacular play.
Yeah, it really was. And for him, as he said, I mean, he wants to score at that point in time. He's not thinking
well,
about
who doesn't?
Field goals.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, but it's just funny when you look at how many Bengals defenders were out there. The fact he was even in a position to potentially score, quite remarkable. And as I mentioned in the first segment, his yards after catch were a big area of emphasis for him going into this season.
That's right. Yeah,
and
we talked about that.
He's taken all of that ability and really made it his own. I mean, he has the length, he has the size, he has the speed, but being able to tie that all together along with that confidence is making him into a pretty dynamic playmaker in this offense. Still things he has to work on, no question about that. This is a guy that's 1 year away, 1 year removed from being an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
But it's impressive what he's been able to accomplish in stepping up on a big stage like that.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because hearing both from Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers after the game, and we've heard it from others as well, Allison, he's kind of a quiet guy. He doesn't necessarily say a whole lot at his locker and stuff like that. But when his teammates and coaches talk about him, one of the first things they always say is, this is a tough kid and
yeah,
a tough competitor. He doesn't necessarily show that in his face and whatnot, but these guys who are around him every day and who are on the field with him, they appreciate a level of toughness that he brings.
He certainly does. And again, that sort of reminds you of Randall Cobb. Different type of players, but just really being able to weather a lot of stuff and come up big when the game matters most.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, before we go to another break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business here. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford next to Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, briefly here before we go, we'll take a look at where things stand around the league. First and foremost, the Packers at 2-1. There's a three-way tie atop the NFC North with the Vikings and the Lions also both being 2-1. But let me see if I got this straight. Last week, the Chicago Bears go down to Tampa Bay and get clobbered. And the Minnesota Vikings take their backup quarterback to Pittsburgh and get clobbered. This week, Tampa Bay goes to Minnesota to face that Vikings backup quarterback, and Tampa Bay gets clobbered, and Pittsburgh takes their 2-0 record to 0-2 Chicago and loses in overtime. Do I have all that? Is that really what happened?
I think you have it right. Now, again, this goes back to why I stopped picking NFL games.
Exactly.
Like anything, straight up, against the spread, whatever. You can't predict it. I mean, if you would have told me, with all due respect to Case Keenum, if you would have told me he would have thrown for 369 yards with 142 passer rating, I would have told you you're out of your mind after that performance a week ago. But he did it. Stephon Diggs got going, and the Vikings rolled. Then you look at the Bears. Everything's going against them. This team's going to be 0-8 at the bye week or whatever people were saying.
Right.
And they go and they get a big win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's a week-to-week league, Michael. And this is, again, why, I mean, this game for the Packers turned out to be so important. I mean, you have to win your games at home. We were just talking about that last Friday.
Yeah.
But also, they didn't get any help in the division either.
Yeah, well, and now you have the Bears and the Packers both on a short week, both coming off of overtime games to meet at Lambeau Field on Thursday night. But also, we need to touch on that that finish in Detroit. You had
I shouldn't say they didn't get any help. They got a little bit of help.
Yeah. The finish in Detroit. Detroit and Atlanta, both 2-0 going into the game. The ball game comes right down to the end. The Lions think they've won on a touchdown pass on a quick slant to Golden Tate. The score is automatically reviewed. They ruled that Tate was down short of the goal line, and because there's only 8 seconds left on the clock, there's a 10-second runoff because of the whole replay rule and the replay stopping or the touchdown stopping the clock when the clock should have been running. I probably didn't explain that.
You did it better than I could.
But the Lions don't have a timeout in order to prevent the 10-second runoff, and so the 10-second runoff ends the game, and moments after the Lions think they've won the game, they've lost the game, and the Falcons are 3-0.
Well, it's funny, too, Mike, because like for me, that between that game and then the safety at Soldier Field, that whatever happened on that play, that was like four paragraphs long in terms of its explanation. There's something I learn every week with the NFL and the rule book and just seeing these little quirks and things happen. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens between the paint. We saw it again at Ford Field, and again, as I mentioned, that safety, whatever you want to call it, you know, with between the Bears and Steelers. Whatever the case may be, the Falcons walk out of there with a victory, and the you know, Detroit has to show some resolve here to come back after that, because that is a demoralizing way to end a game.
Yeah, that's a tough loss. The Lions were looking at being 3-0 with a win over the NFC champs and being on top of the NFC North after 3 weeks, and all that kind of gets tossed upside down for now. But a lot of football left, and with that, we're going to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.